Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
At the time the Book of Mormon was translated, was Joseph Smith incapable of writing or dictating a coherent and well-worded letter? Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. We have been going through a Gospel Topics essay found on LDS.org, the official website of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. This was posted on December 30th, 2013, titled Book of Mormon Translation. We're going through this paragraph by paragraph, and today we are looking at the third paragraph. We want to finish it up. In yesterday's broadcast, we got to the portion where it mentions that Joseph Smith's wife, Emma, insisted, and I'm quoting, at the time of translation, Joseph, quote, could neither write nor dictate a coherent and well-worded letter, let alone dictate a book like the Book of Mormon. And we see this statement quoted on a number of LDS websites, not only on the official websites of the LDS Church, but a lot of Latter-day Saints that have websites or blog sites love to quote Emma's statement that she made in 1879 for the Saints Herald.
And it all lends credibility to Joseph Smith that he couldn't have just made all this up by himself, but rather it had to have been a miraculous work of God. So doing that, it makes sense for the Latter-day Saint.
And yesterday, I mentioned that Joseph Smith wrote a letter to Oliver Cowdery in October of 1829. And this letter, you can see it for yourself, the actual letter that Joseph Smith wrote on the josephsmithpapers.org website that is owned by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. If you looked at that letter, you certainly would not get the impression that he could neither write nor dictate a coherent and well-worded letter. So today we wanted to read through that letter just to show you that Joseph Smith was in fact quite capable of doing exactly what his wife Emma said he could not do.
And we have this letter on an article that we have done on this essay. You can go to our front page, main page of the MRM.org website, and you can go on there, and we are tackling this paragraph by paragraph. But this is what this letter that he wrote on October 22nd, 1829 said. Respected sir, I would inform you that I arrived at home on Sunday morning the 4th after having a prosperous journey and found all well. The people are all friendly to us except a few who are in opposition to everything unless it is something that is exactly like themselves, and two of our most formidable persecutors are now under censure and are cited to a trial in the church for crimes which, if true, are worse than all the gold book business. We do not rejoice in the affliction of our enemies, but we shall be glad to have truth prevail. There begins to be a great call for our books in this country. The minds of the people are very much excited when they find that there is a copyright obtained and that there really is books to be printed. I have bought a horse of Mr. Josiah Stoll and want someone to come after it as soon as convenient.
Interesting, he mentions Josiah Stoll. This is the same Josiah Stoll who hired Joseph Smith to look for this silver mine that he claimed existed. And of course, this is what led to Joseph Smith's Bainbridge court trial when he was on trial as a glass looker. But I want to ask you folks, does that sound like a letter written by someone who could neither write nor dictate a coherent and well-worded letter?
I mean, I was an English teacher for many years, Bill, as you know, and I had high schoolers who wouldn't write as well, who had 10, 11, 12 years of education. Look at the words that he used. He used words such as prosperous, opposition, affliction, prevail, obtained. I didn't read the whole letter, but convenient, prospered, preserved, discharged, and infinite. And by the way, all those words I just mentioned, he spelled correctly. He did have a few words he did not spell correctly, but in fact, he fixed a few of them. For instance, he had spelled trial, T-R-Y-A-L. He crossed through that, and then he spelled it correctly right after that. And then later, he goes through and edits it by putting the right words or adding some letters above the line. Think about this for a second, Bill. You had the Webster's Dictionary that came out in 1828, just the previous year. Did he even have access to a dictionary? Most likely not. It had just been printed. It probably was very expensive. So the way that he wrote and the way that his composition, his structure, I'm going to say very intelligent young man, lots of potential, and his penmanship, too, is excellent. Why wouldn't it be? He had teachers in the family. His dad taught. His sister taught. I mean, there were people in the family that they're not rubes. They're not country people who don't know anything. These are people that may not have had formal education, but I don't think formal education by itself is necessary for a person to be judged whether or not he or she is intelligent.
And I think you make a good point there. When you do look at this letter and you do read it, it does sound like he could very well give us not only a coherent and well-worded letter, but we know that he also had the imagination that he quite possibly could have dictated the Book of Mormon to his scribes.
And you don't need to have an education for creativity.
No, you certainly don't. In the next paragraph, it talks about Joseph Smith receiving the plates in September of 1827, and it was in the following spring in Harmony, Pennsylvania, that he began translating them in earnest with his wife, Emma, and his friend Martin Harris, serving as his main scribes.
And it says, the resulting English transcription, known as the Book of Lehi, and referred to by Joseph Smith as written on 116 pages, was subsequently lost or stolen. As a result, Joseph Smith was rebuked by the Lord and lost the ability to translate for a short time.
That's a fascinating story of how Martin Harris wanted to take some of the manuscript with him, and Joseph Smith relents and allows him to do it. Now, you have to understand, Martin Harris's wife, Lucy, did not really like Joseph Smith. But the fact remains is that this lost 116 pages becomes a horrible problem for Joseph Smith. In fact, when he finds out about the manuscript being lost, according to Joseph Smith's mother in her biographical sketches of Joseph Smith the prophet, Joseph Smith's response was, "Oh my God," said Joseph, clenching his hands, "all is lost, all is lost. What shall I do? I have sinned. It is I who tempted the wrath of God." And his mother says that he wept and groaned and walked the floor continually. Sobs and groans and the most bitter lamentations filled the house.
That's a strange reaction in my mind, Bill, because here's a man who supposedly has the ability to translate. He takes his seer stone, puts it in the hat. He's able to get letter by letter, word by word. He's able to do that. Yes, it's an inconvenience, there's no doubt. 116 pages, that might take a month or two or however long it's going to take. But not all is lost, because just go ahead and redo it. God has given him the ability to do it. Why not go take that charge?
But here's the interesting part of this aspect of Mormon history, and that's not brought out in the Gospel Topics essay, is Section 10 in the Doctrine and Covenants gives us somewhat of a background as to why didn't Joseph Smith just retranslate it? Well, according to the Doctrine and Covenants in Section 10, verse 1, it says, "Now behold, I say unto you," this is God speaking to Joseph Smith, "that because you delivered up those writings which you had power given unto you to translate by the means of the Urim and Thummim into the hands of a wicked man, you have lost them." So Martin Harris is being described as a wicked man not once. He's also described as a wicked man in verse 7 as well, where it says, "And for this cause I said that he is a wicked man, for he has sought to take away the things wherewith you have been entrusted, and he has also sought to destroy your gift." Now, God in this revelation seems to know that someone has already altered the manuscript that Martin Harris had in his possession. We don't know really where it went, but according to this revelation, it seems like God already knows that it's being altered. And he tells Joseph Smith that he is not supposed to retranslate them again. This is what it says in verse 29. "For behold, they have already altered these words, because Satan saith unto them." So we know it's plurality, so someone's in a conspiracy here to do this. There's more than one individual, apparently known by God, to be involved in this. But it says, because Satan saith unto them, he hath deceived you, and thus he flattereth them away to do iniquity, to get thee to tempt the Lord thy God. Verse 30, behold, I say unto you that you shall not translate again those words which have gone forth out of your hands. For behold, they shall not accomplish their evil designs in lying against those words. For behold, if you should bring forth the same words, they will say that you have lied, and that you have pretended to translate, but that you have contradicted yourself. How do you contradict yourself if you come up with an exact translation of what you had earlier?
And if God really wanted to get glory out of this, instead of losing those words out of Lehi, why can't God, you brought this out off air, Bill, why couldn't God just go ahead and show him who had done this so that he can go confront those people? Wouldn't that be amazing to prove that he was a true prophet of God so he could go find those papers and he wouldn't have to do all the retranslation? God knows where they're at. Why couldn't God have done that?
Well, you look at section 10, and it's a pretty verbose chapter. God's doing a lot of talking in this revelation to Joseph Smith. Why couldn't he have just said, hey, by the way, Joseph, I know who took them. Not only do I know that there's more than one involved, and not only do I know that they are changing the words, which, think about that, folks, this is a handwritten manuscript. How do you change a handwritten manuscript to where you can't tell that it's already been altered? I don't know how you do that. I mean, this isn't like a computer.
It would be easier if a person just rewrote it completely different and not even have to use those. Because once you find those again and they're going to say, well, that's not the same, and they've changed it, it's going to be obvious to everyone.
And it has to be in the handwriting of Martin Harris, who wrote it originally. Remember, he was the scribe at this time. So if you're going to make any alterations, the alterations have to match the handwriting of Martin Harris. Now, you would think that you would be able to recognize that type of a forgery, but God doesn't seem to know that. God seems to think that someone's going to be able to perpetrate such a crime and convince people that Joseph Smith wasn't a true prophet, because if he translates it again the exact same way, they've already altered the other manuscript, and that would prove that Joseph Smith wasn't a prophet? Come on.
I'm having a hard time with that. And this whole thing is a crime against humanity, because now, because of what has happened here, we have lost the ability to know exactly what was said. 116 pages that apparently were important enough to have been translated the first time by God is not going to be known by us forever.
Yeah, all the details. Gone. You're right. All the details of those lost 116 pages are going to be gone. So Smith comes up with an abridged version, kind of recounts it a bit, which gets him off the hook. But folks, let's think about this seriously. Don't you think if someone was really trying to alter a handwritten manuscript that you would be able to tell that that was a fraud? Of course you would.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. How would you like to have Mormonism Research Ministry address your church on the subject of Mormonism? MRM's Bill McKeever and Eric Johnson have spoken at many Christian churches all over the country. You see, they can tailor their presentation to meet your church's needs. Anything from a one-day basic introduction to a weekend symposium. You'll find these PowerPoint presentations clear, articulate, and presented in a Christ-honoring fashion. So let your pastor know today that you'd like to have MRM speak at your church. Write us at contact@mrm.org.